Welcome to the RSP Cast. I'm Matt Waldman with a rookie scouting portfolio. Today's going to be a solo effort. Mark Schofield's at the Combine, or just got back from the Combine. Russ Landy and I usually do an every other week show, and we did one last week. And I'm getting close to writing the rookie scouting portfolio now that I'm through with, I'd say, about 95% of my research. And so I thought it'd be time to maybe talk a little bit about some players that still have some questions about them. And I may continue to have questions about them even after I put out the RSP. And this happens every year. This is part of the learning process, is that, you know, every year you're going to encounter some things that you get one step closer to kind of getting a feel or an idea of how you should project talent, or how you grade players. You know, it's an ever evolving process, and it's something that I take very seriously. And it's one of the things that, when it comes to this podcast, it's devoted to talking about how I scout players, you know, and how maybe people in our community also scout talent. So I want to talk a little bit more about that today with two quarterbacks, Jordan Love and Jake Fromm. Okay, so let's start with Jordan Love, because he's getting a lot of conversation as potentially a first-round pick. And I'm going to tell you right away that if that's true, and if he plays like a first-round pick, then I'm going to be wrong about Jordan Love. And I'm okay with that, because part of what I do here isn't just to sell books. You know, I sell the rookie scouting portfolio. Again, it's available for $21.95. You get the pre-draft, post-draft. You get the newsletter. You can learn more about it at mattwaldmanrsp.com. Certainly, that's how I make my living. But one of the reasons that I sell books and people continue to buy them is that it's not just about whether I was right this year. It's about taking you through the process of what I'm learning, what I've learned, and trying to be true to that, as opposed to just trying to be right today or tomorrow, you know, being right today and then not knowing what my basis is for how I'm going to grade things, you know, the next year. So when I look at Jordan Love, you know, I understand the potential that people see in him. If you haven't seen the Utah State quarterback, you know, listen, you're going to watch him and you're going to see a guy with a big arm who can throw the ball across the field from the far hash. He's someone that can make, you know, deep throws off platform, moving to his left or his right and throwing across his body, and sometimes being able to deliver it with an accuracy that, if you see him in isolated instances within highlights or a certain point of a game, you might look at this 6'4", 220-plus pound receiver. I haven't looked at the combine numbers yet. That's something that I'll be doing over the weekend. But you'll look at that and you'll think, wow, this guy has the tools, the physical tools of a Patrick Mahomes. He can do some special things throwing the football. And I would say that you're partially right about that. He can throw the football far. He can throw it across his body far. He can actually get it within range of a play where he can do some, you know, odd angled off platform throws while moving and under pressure that seem very highlight worthy. And occasionally they are. But I think what happens here when you look at Jordan Love is that people are looking at him as the next Patrick Mahomes. You know, I think Charlie Casserly has used the comparison of Patrick Mahomes as the guy that, you know, if he hits on his upside, he could be Patrick Mahomes. And you know, part of that argument I understand, in the sense that if you get him into a camp and you let him develop over a couple of years, maybe he can develop the decision-making skills and the accuracy and the maturity in terms of how to manage an offense, that if you put the talent around him and the scheme around him, maybe he can give you a lot of what Patrick Mahomes gives you. That's the thought. And it comes from the idea that if you took Patrick Mahomes and you had put him in another offense other than the Chiefs, he wouldn't be nearly as good. He wouldn't be an MVP and a Super Bowl champion at this point. That's the argument that you often hear with this. Okay, so, you know, there's some valid points with this. And, you know, I wish I could have had a certain person on the show to discuss this with. All I can say is that you've had me, you've listened to this show, then you know that I've had, you know, I have Russ Landy on, who's a former scout, who is a current scout in the CFL, former NFL scout. You know, I've had people on the show who certainly have worked in that capacity with the NFL or know people and have relationships with NFL people. Chad Ryder is a good example. So when I tell you that the person I'd like to have a conversation with on the show can't come on and I can't mention them by name or affiliation, you know, it's not necessarily that they're with anybody right now, I don't think, but they still may have existing agreements. Let's just put it that way. And so as a result of that, it just wouldn't happen even if he wanted to come on. And I'm not sure he would, but we have conversations regularly. And, you know, we were talking about, you know, Jordan Love last night. Because I raised a question. I saw, you know, I kind of poked my head out of my cave in terms of studying players. And I looked at Love and I saw the discussion that he's considered a first round prospect. And I just said to the guys, I don't get it. You know, tell me why Jordan Love is a first round prospect based on what I've seen. I see him and I may have been asleep while I was evaluating. It wouldn't be the first time, you know, that I've been accused of that probably on occasion. I think we've all, anybody who's listened and does player evaluation, understand that there's some evaluations that you just completely miss. And so I wonder if I'm completely missing something here. Even though I recognize his physical talent, I don't see the intellectual, the football intellectual skills as it's shown on the field. He might be great at whiteboarding and plays and retention of plays, but I'm not seeing him make the right intellectual decisions on the field on a consistent enough basis and in situations that carry a lot of weight, such as the red zone, such as late game management, such as high pressure situations in terms of, you know, pressure in the pocket and forcing the move and picking the appropriate receivers to target or to throw the ball away. I don't see enough of that in his game to see him as a first day prospect. I don't think he's a second day prospect. That's why I'm so confused about this one. And you know, because I see Jordan Love right now as a day three prospect, as a guy who has day one physical talent, day one throwing talent, but not day one or maybe even day two quarterback talent. So I asked my colleague about this and he said, yeah, he goes, he watched him and his thoughts were, and this is a guy that I can understand how a team would want to bring him in and give him a year at a low risk and see if he can pan out. If he can learn quickly enough, he can improve in the things that he needs to improve upon. And we're going to talk about some of those things in a little more detail. And then you end up with a guy who can really be something at a lower cost. But he also didn't think that Jordan Love was a day one prospect, that you wouldn't look at him that way. You know, I talked with Mark Schofield on his way back from the combine. And I said, you know, we haven't talked about quarterbacks, how we really feel about them yet at this point. And let me start it off and broach with you that I just don't get it. And Mark, you know, will probably share with this on other outlets as well as here that he's a little more on my side of the camp than he is on other people's. You know, he sees the potential, but isn't feeling the, you know, the reality of him right away and that you're going to need some time. And people would argue, well, you needed some time with Patrick Mahomes. you know, and that he wouldn't be as nearly as good. But the difference to me is that Patrick Mahomes really did have a feel for the game. It was something that Mark and I have profiled a lot, you know, in RSP film rooms, in our own writing, that Mahomes understood leverage of defenders and was able to make quick and accurate, decisive, you know, throws, that there was little hesitation at all. Now, when he made mistakes, and he made in college, he can sometimes make big mistakes, but there was logic behind the mistakes more often than not that you could live with, that were correctable, that were something that one could teach. So while I agree that Andy Reid and the Chiefs and the system that they use and the surrounding talent that they have has brought out the absolute best in Patrick Mahomes, when I look at Patrick Mahomes pre-draft, what I thought was a good expectation for Mahomes, not this out of the world one that we ended up with as a reality, the good expectation for Mahomes to me was, maybe he goes the path of a Brett Favre, starts out with a team, shows his ability to lead teams to victories through, you know, improvisational play, and then moments of really solid quarterbacking, but also having moments where you're like, what the hell did he just do in a bad way? Like just bad decisions, things that rookies do, second year players do, especially someone who might be a little bit more prone to taking risks and not having the surrounding talent or the scheme that could really support that. And so I expected more of that type of career where maybe he needed 3 or 4 years to really come into his own. And then maybe he would become a guy that you could put into the conversation about being an MVP. You know, I didn't expect, and I don't think anybody would rightfully expect him to be a runaway MVP candidate year one, year two. You know, I just don't think that those things were realistic. And as you know, if you follow this podcast, if you follow my work, Patrick Mahomes was my highest rated quarterback in years. And I did expect him to become a very good player. I just didn't think it would be so soon because of the help that he got. So when you look at Jordan Love in contrast, I don't see those underpinnings in his game. What I see is a player who, when you watch him at Wake Forest, I've watched multiple games of his where he's more apt to try and throw the ball across his body in situations where it doesn't make sense. You know, watching Wake Forest at the end of that game where he throws the ball on the move to his right across his body and it nearly gets intercepted. And then on the next play, he does the exact same thing and it does get intercepted. Or on a play, and I'm trying to remember who they played. I want to say it was BYU that I was watching. I'll have to take a look. Sorry that I don't remember specifically. I've been watching a lot of games of these guys. But there was a game with him where I watched him throw a comeback to the opposite sideline. And it was, I believe, either near completed or completed and then called back due to a penalty. And it was BYU. And on the exact next play, he tries the same throw. And the defensive back is totally game for it. Reads it, expects it, picks it off. And I believe it was a near pick six, if not a pick six, in that play. You know, to watch Love in situations where maybe, you know, same game, rolling to his right and nearly out of bounds. And instead of throwing it out of bounds or stepping out of bounds, he tries to throw the ball across his body into a tight zone. And again, it's picked off or nearly picked off. These are the types of plays I see with him on a regular basis. Plays where it's not just he's trying to play hero ball, you know, at a pivotal moment and he took a chance and he was wrong. It's not just that. It's that he compounds those issues by he takes that chance. It doesn't work. He tries it again on the same exact play or on the next play. It tries the same exact thing. Or he'll repeatedly try these things in situations where it's pretty clear that he shouldn't. You know, and I think that there's no real logic behind him making those types of calls. And so when I see a player like that with those kind of, you know, maturity or conceptual flaws to their game, there's a lot more growing up to do. And just because he can physically do some of the things that Patrick Mahomes can do, he doesn't see the game the way Patrick Mahomes did. And I think that people are too apt that when they miss on a player, they, you know, maybe they didn't have a good evaluation on a player like Mahomes, or they work in the media on a level where maybe it's encouraged to talk about who's the next Patrick Mahomes, who's the next Russell Wilson, who's the next Aaron Rodgers, or who's the next Saquon Barkley, that they think that that's going to appeal to the reader base. And it does short term. It appeals to listeners and readers short term who are just, you know, who aren't like most of you listening. Most of you listening to this show are folks who don't like hearing that stuff, because after a while you're like, nobody's the next, you know, Ezekiel Elliott. No one's the next Russell Wilson. They're unique, or they're so good that saying they're the next is an insult to those guys. And you're, you know, you've watched enough that hearing that, you don't like how it sounds, even just casually. But a lot of people do. And because they just don't take the game that seriously, and that's okay. You know, it's fun for them. It's a hobby. It's something that they do with their buddies or with their family or their church group or whatever it is. And it, you know, they don't look at it that deeply. But I know a lot of you, if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably looking at the game on a little bit of a deeper level. And as a result of that, the idea of the next is something that you don't find that appealing as a read, unless the person's dead serious about it and giving you the goods in terms of analysis that shows you why. And I just don't think, and I think that maybe some of the hype about Jordan Love is centered around he's the next Patrick Mahomes. And really it's he's not. I mean, he may someday become a decent quarterback, but I think he has a lot of work to do that belies the physical skill. And we think of guys like Paxton Lynch, who has a lot of physical skill. He's mobile. He has a huge arm. He could throw, you know, he's a guy that, you know, a lot of teams liked, and he was picked in the first round by the Broncos. Do you think he was worth a first round pick in hindsight? And of course, hindsight's easy to discuss. I certainly had him as, I think, my third or fourth or fifth prospect in that class. You know, even though I had concerns about red zone ability and things like that, I still had him, you know, ranked on the higher end. But I actually think that Jordan Love, you know, we look at Paxton Lynch, and I think Paxton Lynch has probably earned a higher grade from of the work that he showed than what I've seen from Jordan Love thus far. And so, you know, I guess people would call me a Love hater in this respect. And, you know, I hope the guy succeeds, and I hope I'm wrong with what happens here on that level, because you want to see players succeed. But I just don't, I'm trying to come to grips with him, because what I see is just it is the physical skills without the ability to understand when to throw the ball away, when to check down, how to protect the football as you're moving around, because he moves around, you know, with a lot of dynamic ability, but he also has the ball way outside his frame, and he's more open to taking hits and losing the control of it. You know, taking chances with the football in pivotal situations inside his own 20, inside the 20s of, you know, the opponent late game, where he's just taking too many chances, and he's putting the team at risk with his behavior in the effort to make a huge play. And I just think that that's, you know, you look at that and I don't see how you look at someone and say, yes, that's a guy who's going to start right away for me. And, you know, with Patrick Mahomes, I think Patrick Mahomes could have started right away. You know, people say, well, he got a year, But if you notice what he did against the Broncos defense when they were still an awesome defense in his first season, and it was, again, end of the year, week 17, but he was impressive. And privately, that team, you know, the Broncos, after the season was over and after that game, were like, we're going to have that guy's going to be a lot of trouble for us in the division. They knew right away that guy's going to be a lot of trouble. The Chiefs knew right away. I was told that, you know, the Chiefs literally the scouts would turn on the Friday tape. And I think it's public now. They turn on the Friday tape and watch Mahomes and run scout team and just laugh with glee at how good he was and how good they knew he was going to become throughout the season before he ever set foot on a football field during the regular season. I don't think you're going to say the same is the case with Jordan Love. That's not a comparison with Love. You're literally going to have to wait at least a year, maybe two. And that's okay if you have a good starter. Alex Smith had a Pro Bowl caliber year. You could do that with Mahomes. I don't know if Jordan Love at the top end of the first round or in the middle of the first round is necessarily going to have that kind of guy. That, you know, I don't know if, you know, Mark and I talked about the idea of Jacoby Brissett as being that kind of bridge if he ends up in a place like Indianapolis. But, you know, as Mark said, you know, you might need a year of Jacoby Brissett, whereas there's some other quarterbacks in this class, the one I'm going to talk about next, Jake Fromm, who Mark said you might need a game. And Mark's not as high on Fromm, I don't think, as I am. And let's transition over to that, because I have Fromm pretty high on my board. And the concerns about him are that, you know, he's not a top-end athlete, and he lacks velocity on his throws. He's not a top-end arm talent. And still, while that's the case, I have a starter grade for him. You know, a guy who can come in and maybe he's not an immediate starter, but a guy who can come in this year, later this year, or next year. And I think this year, really, and with a good team around him, be productive. And maybe, and within a year or two, be a very productive starter with the right fit. And as a lot of the you know, more nationally known draft writers have talked about, from what I learned over the past week, is that, you know, that he's not a fit for every team. That's how they look at it. And that's because he has a smaller hand size. He's got that 8 3/4 inch hand. He also has, you know, the like they said, he doesn't make some of those opposite field throws. So the other night, or last night, really, I did some spot checking of Fromm and looked at really what, you know, looked at the things that I still had questions about. And I'm going to pull up this list that I have here, because I looked at dropbacks, I looked at velocity, I looked at the range of his throws, I looked at the mechanics of his throwing, and I looked at some certain types of decisions that I wanted to see a little bit more of. And I looked at some games I hadn't seen before. I re-reviewed the 10 games that I did chart fully. And here's some of the things that I noticed about Fromm. One of the things that I really liked, his drop back game. You know, certainly he plays a lot from, you know, shotgun and pistol nowadays, but they still, at Georgia, still use occasional I formation. They still use occasional sets with him under center, or ask him to perform drops of 3 and 5 and occasionally 7-step drops. And I like that he could adjust the arc of his drop, you know, based on the development of the pocket. So against Alabama in the national championship game, that's a notable play. I remember seeing him where he executed a 5-step drop, and as the pocket took shape and there was starting to be some pressure coming from his left, I believe, he finished that drop kind of angling to his right to find the throwing lane quickly. He didn't have to move after the drop to do that. So I really liked that. It just shows someone who has comfort with his feet, who's someone who has facility with all the different drop types. He can throw off his back foot when needed with a certain range and still be okay. You know, I thought, you know, the short range is very accurate. I think, you know, within about 20 yards, 25 yards, at least in the middle of the field, or at least from maybe the numbers inside, he can throw with that kind of accuracy and with enough velocity. So I was, you know, the drops checked off for me, in maybe even a little bit of an upgrade from what I'd seen in the past after reviewing it all again, that I ultimately gave him a pretty strong grade for his footwork in the drop back game. And then when it comes to velocity, that's the big thing with him. People say is like, he just doesn't have the arm talent to be a starter. And I disagree with that. I think he has the arm talent to be a good starter, just not with every team. Okay. So some of the things that people talk about that he can't do, you know, I watched him against Florida, and there were three throws where he should have thrown with more velocity, where they were opposite, you know, from one hash to the opposite side of the field across the, you know, from the far hash to say the near side flat or the near side sideline. And you could see where maybe he was a couple yards short. One play was about 5 yards short. You know, there were some plays where it looked like that he put too much air under the ball. There's a play where he rolls to his left from pressure, resets his chest as he's rolling to the left, and throws the ball downfield into the end zone. I want to say it's about a 30, 35-yard throw, somewhere in that range, and just leads the receiver too far, where the receiver dives and the ball goes between his fingertips. And the receiver might have had a chance of catching it, or a better chance, if Fromm didn't put so much air under the ball, where he could have thrown it on a line and the receiver, and could have put it where the receiver was in stride. And you could probably argue that would have been easier, or maybe put even a little more air under it without as much velocity and let the receiver take his time a little bit more to run under it. But you could see that, you know, one or the other. And I would say that it was more about the velocity, where if he could have gotten it a little bit more into the receiver with a little bit less air under it, it would have been a more pinpoint throw. So as a result of that, that's one. There's one that's opposite hash against Florida earlier in the game that's about 40 yards across, you know, across the field, and it was like a couple yards shy, and the safety comes over and cuts it off from underneath to tip the ball away. And then the next throw, he completes, I think, a 20 or 25-yard throw to the opposite hash. So what you see is that, and I saw this against Bama twice, against South Carolina, several games, but the four that come to mind right off the bat are the two Bama games from 2018, the national championship game, and then almost a year later, the title game for the SEC conference, and then South Carolina this year, Florida this year. And what you see is 20 to 25 yards, he can throw with enough velocity that he can fit the back shoulder fade, the comeback, the deep out, and throw it pinpoint against tight coverage, and there's enough velocity there. So to me, that tells me right there that he has the arm for a lot of teams. You know, a lot of teams are going to play that short and intermediate passing game, and then maybe off play action, they'll go over the top. But if you're asking him to, you know, paint, you know, kind of throw your offense out of a corner that they've been put into, you know, kind of the way Stafford or Rodgers can, or, you know, somebody of that, or Mahomes of that ilk, you're probably not going to get that from him, because he's going to be a little short. He's going to wind up in situations where defenders can squat on some of those types of routes and be able to jump them. But there aren't many quarterbacks who not only make good decisions like Fromm does, we'll talk about that later, but also are able to throw the ball with that kind of heat, you know, that kind of velocity to beat defenders who are able to play a receiver tight. So I think, you know, people want a little more from a quarterback than they really realistically should expect, even not the level of, you know, discourse that I frequently see or have with people who certainly understand their football. You know, but it's, you know, scouting's an interesting game in that respect. So, you know, other throws like this, saw him underthrow an opposite hash, back shoulder fade that it looked like, you know, was about a yard or two shy. There's a 20-yard opposite back shoulder fade that was knocked away by a defender against Bama in the national championship game. But Again, this was one that was a half a foot from the receiver's hand when the defender turned. So I thought that was a good throw. He had a good 23-yard comeback to the same side of the field. And then a year later against Bama, he had a pinpoint over the shoulder throw and stride off a two-step drop with no reset step, 30 yards opposite hash. In order to throw a ball without having to reset your feet off of a two-step drop, you're going to have to get some juice on that ball. So 30 yards, not a problem. Another one like that, 42 yards and stride up the right flat, pinpoint against tight coverage, led the receiver perfectly into the end zone for a touchdown. And it was an excellent play in terms of, oh, actually, that's not the one I was talking about. Actually, that 42-yard one was off of a three-step drop. No, like maybe a small little prep step. It didn't even, I wouldn't even count it as one. It was just kind of a little bit of an adjustment, but it wasn't one to generate more momentum or get his feet under him. He threw that ball 42 yards and stride up the flat and tight coverage, and it was pinpoint. That was a throw right there that told me, yeah, the arm talent is there. Where the issue that I see with him, you know, is throws that are just not realistic, you know, 40 yard off platform, or making an off platform retreating throw under pressure to the same side, 22 yards downfield against a tight corner on a comeback like he did at South Carolina, where he basically tried a hero throw and no one should have tried it, because those are the types of throws I see in the NFL where young quarterbacks try those with good arms that are better than, you know, better than Fromm's characterized, and they end up being victimized by pick sixes. So what I learned from this velocity issue is that when I watched him, you didn't see much of a snap through his hips. You didn't really see him drive through his legs and generate torque and power through his legs to get that velocity on the throw. He's mostly an arm thrower at this point. So after watching those moments, I thought, let me look up and see. You know, first I talked to some people. I asked Will Hewlett of The Range Quarterbacking, who's working with Anthony Gordon right now. He's worked with a variety of people. He coaches Drew Bledsoe's son. He's a, you know, he's well respected in the coaching community. I've had him on the RSP cast in the past, as well as we've done some film rooms together talking about guys like Mariota and Jameis Winston. And I asked Will about Fromm. And he said, well, I saw him at the combine last night. And he goes, and, you know, I didn't think he looked great in terms of throwing the ball. He kind of leads with his chest. But that's just the combine and I haven't studied his tape. So I asked him, I said, well, I asked Will about this because I watched Chris Sims. I saw an interview with Chris Sims on Roto World, who was doing a kind of a throw and catch kind of interview during Super Bowl week in Miami with Jake Fromm. And Fromm was down there for some promotional thing with State Farm. Yeah, Jake from State Farm, right? So, you know, a lot of this is puff piece kind of stuff. You know, let's have a friendly conversation. Let's not, you know, we're going to throw softballs at you. We're not going to get too hard hitting. But you can glean some things from some of these if you're looking at it critically. And so one of the things that, you know, that Sim said that I would say could be more of a puff type of piece was saying, hey, I'm surprised at how much spin and how much RPMs you get on the ball when we throw. And he said, I didn't expect that from you. You know, there isn't, you know, basically implying everyone says he doesn't have a great arm. He goes, the ball jumps off your hand a lot better than what I thought. And you're like, well, who's Chris Sims to say, you know, if you're someone, you know, a lot of people might say that. But again, let's remember, he grew up with an NFL quarterback of, you know, with a terrific career. And he grew up with, and he also got to play catch with a number of guys in the NFL. And also a lot of guys who were friends of Phil Sims, who were high end quarterbacks. He knows he may not have been a starting NFL caliber talent for the NFL, but he was a quality college quarterback. And he's been around a lot of quarterbacks, and he understands the position at a level that few do. Okay. Maybe scouting talent isn't his thing. I don't know. I don't listen to him on a regular basis, But understanding the mechanics of the quarterback position, you know, he certainly has an idea about that for sure. So when he says Phil Sims, you know, or not Phil Sims, excuse me, Jake Fromm's throws, the ball jumps off his arm or comes off his arm with a lot of RPMs in it, and it has some energy to it that he didn't expect, that's cool. And that tells you a little something there too. You know, I noticed that Jim Nagy, the director for the Senior Bowl, thought that Jake Fromm was making a mistake coming out as a junior, but then since has reviewed the tape some more and realized that, no, he's wrong about that. And we're going to talk about that a little bit more later as well. But one of the things that came with that interview with Phil Sims is he asked Jake Fromm, let's get in the weeds and talk about throwing mechanics and how you learned how to throw. And Fromm said, you know, I was a baseball player at first. And he played in the Little League World Series, as a matter of fact. And he played third base and shortstop and a little catcher. And he showed Phil Sims a little bit about a throwing motion, you know, that was more of a baseball-esque type of throwing motion that impressed Sims, because Sims was like, you know, listen, there are a lot of guys who can't throw the ball in that type of way that you just showed me. And so that was kind of impressive in terms of the off-platform type of stuff that he can do. It's not Mahomes-like on the level that Mahomes can, but he's going to be able to dish the ball, you know, around defenders with the sidearm and three-quarter motions. And I've seen him do that on tape rather well. And so that's good. But then they asked him to get into the mechanics. And he said, well, in addition to learning to throw that way, he said one of the things that, you know, that he's done is that he's basically been an arm thrower for most of his career. And he said, I'm paraphrasing, but he said, I've gotten away with being an arm thrower up to this point, but I know that that's not going to remain the case once I get into the NFL. So one of the guys that I'm trying to model my game after to be him 2.0 in terms of doing everything that he's done to improve his game is Drew Brees. And when you watch Drew Brees, you know, the thing that Drew Brees did to improve his arm velocity, and velocity is different than distance and range. We're going to talk about range in a bit, because that's not a problem for Jake Fromm, not remotely a problem. So if you're wondering if he can't throw a ball a distance, we're going to talk about that more, because he really can. But the range and the velocity in which he throws the ball at certain ranges is what dwindles, where you really have to, the distance doesn't matter as much as the velocity, and the ball has to be have a flatter arc, more of a line drive than a high arcing throw. And so when you think about that in terms of with Fromm, you know, he said, I have to learn to activate my legs a little bit more into the throwing motion. And one of the things that's happening is that he's working with his coach, and I heard from Will Hewlett as well. He said he knows the guy's name's David Morris, and David Morris is well known and well respected for what he does. And one of the things that they're first doing is not even to do with the legs. Fromm said that his chest, he's kind of a little bit more developed in the chest and arms than a lot of quarterbacks are. And I necessarily wouldn't call him stiff, but he's certainly closer to that end of the spectrum than other guys. And so they're trying to loosen up the muscles in the chest and loosen up his elbow a little bit more so that he can get more of a whip-like motion with his throwing that can, you know, generate more velocity. And you know, if you think about throwers, there's a lot of boxing parallels in the sense that, you know, guys who throw with power, it's not necessarily the legs. While the legs certainly help generate a punch, the guys who have great lats, who have the ability to kind of whip their upper body in a motion that creates a whip-like effect, are often the guys who throw some of the most dangerous and powerful punches. And it's mainly because of how fast they can get their body around. It's kind of like bat speed, you know, that creates that power. So it's the same kind of thing that you're looking at that upper body to kind of create that bat speed. And so they're trying to work on that, but he also knows that he's going to have to bring his legs into the equation a little bit more too. And from what I've seen with the throws that he's missed, they're by a small margin for the most part. Yeah, there was one that was by 5 yards, but most of the ones I saw were like 1 to 3 yard differential. If the ball was just a little bit lower on the arc and he could get that extra 1 to 3 yards out of that throw, that would have been the difference. And I think that he might be able to do that. He might really be able to improve that in terms of how he's able to use his legs to as a thrower on some of these plays. But let's just say he doesn't, because, we often say how easy it is to improve these types of things. And we've seen Tom Brady improve his arm motion or his release motion and improve his velocity. We've seen Drew Brees do that for sure. I think Peyton Manning has probably improved it a little bit over the course of his career. But say he can't, because what happens is that when it comes to this time of year, we're always looking at guys as whether they're first round prospects or they're good prospects, because whether or not they've gotten in the first round, because we've heard all the statistical percentages that if you don't have success as a first round player, getting a chance to start, then the chances are far more remote, or they go down precipitously in terms of your ability, the odds that you're going to become a good starter. Well, you look at this and you look at what Fromm has to offer, and I think the velocity is good enough for teams that, as, and Mark mentioned this as well, is that, if you look at guys who play maybe in a warmer environment or play in a dome, if you're playing a division with a lot of warmer environment teams, think the Colts, who play in a dome, but then they face the Titans, which is a warmer weather climate, the Jaguars, the Texans, all warmer weather climates. You're not looking at him facing the elements a lot in the same way that you don't see that with Drew Brees. He doesn't have to face the elements an awful lot unless he goes on the road to some teams with, tougher climates. And that's where he struggles occasionally. But when it comes to what he can do well with throwing the ball, the range isn't an issue. Down the middle of the field, up the side, the near sideline, up the flats, up the seams, his range is consistently between 47 and 56 yards, pinpoint accurate. Matt Ryan's range isn't that good. Matt Ryan is a good NFL quarterback, but anything over 45 yards and his accuracy gets kind of hazy. And I understand that he's one of the better deep ball throwers in the game, at least statistically in recent years. But if you watch his tape, a lot of what I would call pinpoint or general accuracy, catchable accuracy, where you have to, the receiver has to work for it outside of the scope of what the design is or what the situation should normally call for, excuse me, versus, pinpoint where it's exactly where the ball needs to be in stride, or where if the receiver's leaping for it, it's because that has to be the plan for that type of route, like a back shoulder fade, something like that. Jake Fromm, watching over and over again, 47-yard go route well in front of the receiver who caught it in stride from a clean pocket, and the pocket's actually compressing as he let the ball go, 3-step drop, no hitch. That was against Alabama. I've watched him throw a 53-yard deep cross in stride off a 7-step drop. I think that was against Vanderbilt, where he did that. And again, leading the receiver. These aren't plays where the receiver has to turn back and wait on it. The receiver is literally reaching out in front at full speed, catching the ball in stride. And the difference between the receiver doing that and having to turn around behind him can be the difference between 3 to 5 yards in terms of the distance that's thrown with that ball. He had one I watched, a 54-yard post ahead of the receiver in another game, consistently I saw a 56-yard throw, multiple 52, 53-yard throws that were pinpoint accurate. So again, to me, it's like you're going to get the deep ball element from his game. I don't think Andy Dalton has that element to his game pinpoint. I think once he gets to that 40, 45-yard range, we've seen him struggle being able to get the ball over and out in front of a guy like A.J. Green or Ross. Now, he can do it occasionally, but it hasn't been a consistent part. The fact that Fromm's doing that now, whereas a guy like Dalton's improved a little bit, Breeze has improved, Brady's improved, that's a good sign. You know, so the velocity, he's not going to be Matthew Stafford. He's not going to be Rodgers, that type of thing. But again, we look at even a guy like Deshaun Watson or Lamar Jackson, and they don't have velocity to the sidelines. It's very strong, and the teams work their games around it. Now, they do have the running element that Fromm doesn't have. So that's a big difference. But Fromm does maneuver the pocket well. He makes strong decisions. He can spread the ball around. He can manipulate defense as well. And when you look at that decision making, you put everything together, I think there's a lot of promise for him. I mean, this is a guy that can look off, defenders or hold them. He can go to his second or third options. He can hold players to the outside and come back to the middle. He can hold players deep and come back short. He can hold them to one side of the field and throw to the opposite flat. Does all that really well, along with his play action game that he really sells to a high level, whether it's, off of, 3, 5, 7 step drops, turning his back, using both hands, one hand, hiding the ball, bootlegs, does all that well. Decision-wise, he finds the checkdowns pretty well. The thing for me is sometimes he tries a little bit of the hero throws that every young quarterback tends to do. He'll try throwing off platform from a retreating position under pressure, like I talked about in the South Carolina game. There's also one against South Carolina where he just couldn't fit the ball over the zone on a deep out, and the defender was able to either tip it away or intercept it. And so there's times that maybe he overestimates his ability to reach a defender in a situation, but it's not one of those situations where you look at it and say, how in the hell did you make that decision? Whereas you look at Jordan Love, there's plays where when he's throwing the ball, there's not a passing lane for him there. Or he's throwing the ball and he's already basically tipped off the defender on the play before that he was trying to go there, and they run the exact same route and he tries to do it again. Sometimes there's a level of hubris to Love's game that I have more concerns about than with Fromm. So, a guy like Mark also mentioned Fromm to Chicago. What if he goes to replace Trubisky? Mark really likes that because of the types of routes that they run that he feels like Fromm could go there and do really well. And I agree with that idea. I think a team like, the West Coast leanings of the Colts, the Bears certainly are that type of a team. They could be good. Those are teams that I think where Fromm could benefit. Now, you don't want to see him on teams like, the Steelers, where they have, weather-oriented, weather-affected environment games, where you want, you're regularly going to have to throw into wind or throw into the elements. Cleveland with the lake effect, I know they're not planning on getting rid of Baker Mayfield anytime soon. So, but teams like that, like the way Buffalo picked Josh Allen, similar kind of idea that, there are certain teams that may not be as good of a match. Maybe the Saints. If the Saints decide that this whole talk about, talk about their reserve quarterbacks, the kid from BYU, if they feel like that was all more talk than it was action, they may, get a guy like Fromm and feel good about that, because again, they're playing, teams for the most part that are warmer weather environment teams. Atlanta in a dome, you got Carolina. And again, these are, Tampa Bay, all nice weather teams. Obviously Bruce Arians is, Mark also mentioned, we kind of laughed about, is Bruce Arians knows himself. He likes going deep. He wants big arm quarterbacks. Jake Fromm ain't going to be that guy for him. So, it's just about finding the right fit. But, there are There are other quarterbacks that, you know, Russell Wilson, to an extent, might not be a Bruce Arians guy, even though he has a good arm. He doesn't make some of those high-end velocity throws either that you're looking for, but he's got a great range to his throwing in terms of the distance that he can throw the ball and what he can do on the move. So Fromm's a guy that does a little bit more of it like that. Maybe not, and obviously not as mobile, but he can throw on the move and he can throw deep. So I don't have as many concerns about him, but it's going to be interesting because it's most likely come April, late April, we're going to see, you know, most likely see Jordan Love taken before Jake Fromm. That's a very high possibility. We're probably going to hear a lot of things in favor of Love and what he could become. But as my colleague said, who I didn't mention by name, but described kind of in vague terms, he said, you know, it's a tough bet to expect a player to make more than one standard deviation level of improvement to his game. One is a good expectation, but if you're expecting more than one, you're probably playing against the odds. And I think that that makes sense. I think that in a lot of respects, teams are playing against the odds by trying to go with Love. And I understand that Love, you know, maybe had a different team set up in terms of personnel and, you know, healthier linemen compared to last year. But one thing that was also brought up with him is that Love threw a lot of interceptable passes last year. And you watch his tape, he may not have had as many interceptions, but when you look at the context of his throws, the decision-making still wasn't strong. And to me, that's the thing, the process, not the result. The interceptions, that's the result. How he's throwing the ball, where the ball's landing, whether the defender caught it or not, but was the defender in position to make the play instead of the receiver? And that happened often enough that there's still reason for concern, regardless of the kind of, rationale or excuse that can be given about 2019 versus 2018 when it comes to his performance. So those are two guys that I have questions about. Ultimately, is Fromm's arm talent worth projecting him to the point that he's, you know, one of my top five quarterbacks in this class, maybe even a little higher than that? And is it reasonable to project Jordan Love as a starting caliber talent based on the weight of what he could become? Because again, I've given a lot, you know, one of the things I do with the RSP is I give bonuses to the grades. In my grading system, there's built-in kind of bonuses for potential improvement based on what seems likely for a player to improve upon, as well as maybe where a player has skills that put him in between two tiers, you know, between maybe the star tier and the starter tier, or the starter tier and the committee tier, and where it's just like he flashes certain starter skills, but not consistently enough, or in every situation that I've got to find to put him in the higher tier. So I give him a bonus as a result of that, usually, and that gives him a few more points. Well, you know, Jordan Love has some of the most amount of, has probably, there's maybe two other guys that have more bonuses on that kind of level in my grading system at the position than he does, and he's, you know, but he's the highest ranked of those three players. So there's a lot of potential with him, but what I'm seeing is a lot of it also is based on, you know, based on things that haven't happened yet or may never happen. And so we're about to find out, because he's going to need it to happen on an even larger scale than what I think I could naturally project. And so even if he succeeds, it's going to be interesting why that is for me and what I can learn from it and how I can actually, whether I can realistically apply anything from it as a result. Because if it turns out that he just improved at a rapid rate and covered a lot of ground, I'm not sure it's going to be something that I could project and feel reasonable about doing from year to year with other players. But at the same time, if it's something that, you know, that I missed just in total, like just totally misanalyzed, that's a different story. Then, you know, obviously I can make sure that I have some certain safeguards in place to help me understand what I'm looking at. So I'm hoping that's more the case, but we'll find out. You know, I appreciate you listening to this solo effort. Certainly, you know, we have some wonderful guests, and Mark Schofield will be on again. You know, we'll have Russ Landy on once again. I'll probably have some other additional guests on from time to time. What I would like to ask you, for those of you who've made it to the end, is I had an interesting conversation on Twitter, because I get invited to a lot of podcasts, especially around the time where the NFL draft is about to get underway. And a lot of those podcasts are dynasty podcasts, fantasy podcasts. And I get asked to do them. I don't say, hey, can I be on your podcast and do this? I mean, people ask me. So I want to know from you, you know, if you want to email me and just tell me, you know, how many podcasts you listen to, you know, or do you like hearing me on multiple podcasts? I know some of you are a vocal minority, as I've described to the person I had the conversation with, which is that most of you listen to multiple podcasts, and you may hear me on 3 to 5 different podcasts, and they ask me the same stuff. And so, while sometimes I try to give them a heads up that I've talked about this player 3 times already, sometimes they still want to talk about him because for their listeners, they're banking that their listeners aren't the same people listening to other podcasts, which isn't always the case. But again, I'd be interested to know what your take is on, you know, would you rather me just keep the content that I do to the RSP cast and do fewer podcasts during the spring? You know, I'm interested in what you think about that. Or does it really matter to you? And you listen to, you have like 1 or 2 favorites and you just kind of go from that standpoint. And then I guess that's really about it for this week. I'm going to get started to write this book after I get some sleep. I was up all night studying those players along with some other guys, and I'm getting ready to, you know, finish that up and write the book. Like I said, you can get the RSP publication, which is the pre-draft and post-draft, at mattwaldmanrsp.com or mattwaldman.com. That's the direct sales site, is mattwaldman.com. If you want to learn more, you go to mattwaldmanrsp.com. You know, I'm working my way towards kind of unifying those sites, by the way, but it's a process. I've got some other things got to go on first to make sure that I'm putting a good foot forward. But you get the pre-draft with the RSP, which comes out April 1st, and it's downloadable on PDF form. And you'll get an email when you sign up for it that lets you know when the RSP is ready. That gives you all the pre-draft, you know, summaries. It gives you rankings. It takes you through my entire eval process in what has been described to me as a very entertaining way and a very insightful way. And then you get the post-draft, no later than a week after the NFL draft. And that gives you a fantasy cheat sheet. And I basically combine my post-draft rankings that I update with ADP that I've studied from other fantasy drafts to give you kind of sweet spots to pick players. So if I like a player more than other people, I give you a basic idea of where you can wait to get him and still get him at value and get him. Or guys that I have rated lower, where you can, whether you should avoid them or wait a little bit longer to get them as a value. So that helps out. And you also get 3 years worth of rankings, you know, from the past 3 draft classes, and a newsletter that runs from June through December. And I update those rankings, you know, in August, and I believe in either November or December. And again, a percentage of every sale goes to Darkness to Light, an organization devoted to preventing and addressing sexual abuse of children. Great cause. And I appreciate those of you who've listened to the show. Always love to have feedback from the variety outlets that you listen to this show on. And thanks again. You guys have a great weekend.